Welcome to Deep Thrones Pod. We're doing a new series called Westeros Stories, where we enter the world of Ice and Fire with new perspectives and a focus on individual successes and struggles. This is part one of four. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Westeros Stories. This iteration is called A Peasant Named Pate, and I hope you enjoy this story. It will be read by my host, Sheedy.
Hi.
And here we go.
A peasant named Pate. Light was beginning to shine through his eyelids. He did everything he could to keep them shut. His dream was so splendid. Everything he had ever hoped for in life. There, outside of a sunny grove, was a maid in distress. As he drew near in the dream, it became clear that the maid was Lady Sansa, who had come from the north and was forced to witness the beheading of her father at the command of the dreadful King Joffrey. Joffrey was there in the grove, brandishing his longsword about like a petulant child playing with a toy. "Now this is the moment I've been waiting for," he thought in his dream. "The moment where I rescue Lady Sansa and win her over as my bride. I'll show them. I'll be royalty. I'll no longer be a peasant named Pate." The light was now shining brighter through his eyelids, and he was starting to hear stirring downstairs. Or was that next door? It didn't matter to him. Any way he could remain in this dream and delay reality sounded about as good as the seven heavens to him. He closed his eyes tighter. Then he felt a sudden jab in his ribs. "Pate, you must get up," Barrow whispered. Pate laid still, eyes forced shut, hoping Barra would go away. Then again, another jab. "Come on, Pate, get up," said Barra in a louder, more hurried whisper. He cracked one eye open ever so slightly. There sat Barra, hunched over, a wiry young girl with coarse, coal black hair and piercing blue eyes. Barra swore by the seven that she'd have five name days, but no one in that shanty makeshift trust had parents to validate name days. Pate thought she was closer to her third name day than her fifth. He shut his eyes once more. Foom! Pate caught a swift kick in his thigh, followed by a sharp, burning pain. "Seven hells!" shouted Pate. "Barra, why would you..." Pate's eyes opened, and when he turned from lying down, he saw a figure much more daunting than Barra. Suddenly, shone through a hole in the roof directly onto gray, almost silver, if it weren't so filthy hair. That's all Pate needed to see to know trouble had come. "Get off your arse, you useless swine! Don't you know we got work to do?" said Alex angrily. Alex was a tall, skinny youth of 16. Although skinny, Alex was deceivingly strong, with a long, gray-silver mane hanging down his shoulders. One could be brought to believe he was of Targaryen descent if he didn't have dull, lifeless brown eyes. Pate could practically see the angst twitching in Alex's muscles through his torn, ragged black tunic. I'm up, Pate said, hurriedly, pulling up his breeches that slid down as he jumped up. "You're not going to ruin this day for me, Piggy. Not this one. Now get ready and let's go," said Alex, eyes locked on Pate, ready to strike again. Pate knew better than to say anything back. He had had many lessons in the form of bruises and even some broken bones as a result of questioning Alex. Even though Pate was unsure about what exactly he was supposed to be getting ready for, he carried on nonetheless. Pate took a few steps to his designated corner of the truss, where he found Barra crouched hiding. Pate called her B. They had grown fond of each other, out of necessity, watching out for one another for survival. He whispered some words of assurance to B and grabbed his only possession, a worn knapsack that was once used to collect food waste from inns and gambling dens. Food had become scarce since the War of the Five Kings had started. For reasons Pate didn't understand, there wasn't much food left in King's Landing anymore, and what food there was certainly was not wasted. They hadn't even come upon so much as a bowl of brown in the fortnight. The decrepit group of orphans climbed down a creaky ladder and headed through the threshold out onto the streets of Flea Bottom. The smell of shite, no doubt, rolling down from the nobles up on Rhaenys Hill lingered heavily in the air. There was more foot traffic than usual, and there seemed to be an incensed, almost vengeful mood in the air. Bea grabbed a hold of Pate's hand. The pair fell in behind the others. Alex led the small column. He was the tallest of the kids in the truss, and that was all one needed to be in charge amongst orphans. To his left and right were Hugh and Dumb Donnell, as always. Short with pale skin and a dirty mop of brown hair, Hugh was about as ordinary gets. Donald was a strong, simple boy who somehow managed to keep his muscle despite the food shortage in King's Landing. Though he didn't have all of his wits about him, he was wise enough to throw in his lot in with Alex as all means for survival. One learned quickly that sticking together meant staying alive. Even dumb Donald knew orphans often went missing in Flea Bottom. The air was thick, smelting with heat and excrement penetrating their nostrils. But through it all, a scent of fresh bread across Pate's nostrils. B, this is the Street of Flour. I think Alex is going to distract our favorite baker and his guard this time so that we can sneak some bread from the oven, Pate said to B, recalling one of the tricks the orphans would do before the baker acquired a guard. As the orphans drew closer to the bakery, they noticed a raucous crowd gathering in the front of the storefront. Angry men and women poured onto the street, shouting, cursing, and calling out for bread. The kids pressed on, moving toward the baker. The crowd, although gaunt, was filled with hateful energy, seemingly blaming the baker for the lack of food in all of King's Landing. Cries of "Traitor!" and "Breadmonger!" began to rise above the rest. By now, the orphans were close enough to make out a man in front of the mob. He was in the middle of accusing the baker of charging a whole silver stag for a small loaf of bread when the baker's guard struck him with a mace and sent him reeling backward. The crowd surged toward the baker in response and easily overwhelmed the guard. "It's time to go," Alex said in a somber tone, the first time Pate had ever heard a hint of fear in the orphan's leader's voice. The motley crew of orphans fought to the back of the mob, trying to exit the crowd before tragedy befell any of them. But B's hand slipped from Pate's in the chaos. He turned back toward the bakery to find B. Barra in the crowd. "B!" yelled Pate. "B! Pate!" he heard faintly coming from toward the baker's oven. "B! Pate!" Pate kept struggling through the crowd toward the sound of Barra's voice. He finally found her struggling under a table at the baker's storefront. Pate rushed, grabbed a hold of Barra, hoisted and positioned her on his back. By now, madness had consumed the crowd around them. While looking left and right, trying to find the quickest escape, a terrible shriek filled the air. Pate focused his attention in the direction of the noise, and there he saw the baker being forced into his own oven by his former customers, burning alive, screaming for someone, anyone, to help. "Don't look, B," Pate said, hoping she'd cover her eyes. Pate thought to himself, "This isn't right. Maybe I should do something." Then he turned and hurriedly went back to pushing through the crowd to return to the truss. Pate and B pressed into the makeshift truss, where the other orphans gathered. Alex and Hugh had already arrived, sweating and out of breath. Dumb Donald was nowhere to be found. "Where's Dum Dum?" said Bee, who had taken to calling Donald Dum Dum because she couldn't quite pronounce Donald yet. "How if I know? Probably out searching for food," said Alex dismissively. Exhausted, Pate plopped down in the corner on the ground level of the two-story truss and set his knapsack next to him, empty as ever. He was unsure what all the fuss was about in Flea Bottom that day, but he was sure that he wanted no more of it. Alex had other ideas. "Hey, get up, Piggy, we got more work to do," said Alex in a meaner tone than usual, this time probably trying to make up for the fear he felt at the bakery earlier. Pate didn't stir. Alex began stomping over toward Pate, so Pate darted up to his feet. Okay, what are we doing now?" Pate asked. "What we doing now? The only thing we set out to do today, don't you remember, Piggy? There's a royal possession to send Princess Marcella off to Dorne to get hitched, where it is. The rich folk will be handing out bread during the procession." A royal procession, thought Pate. That means Lady Sansa might be there. His heart fluttered. A city in chaos, a damsel in distress. This could be his moment. He couldn't let this chance slip, not this one opportunity. An opportunity to become more than just a peasant named Pate. There's no way he's missing this. There's no, "Hey, Piggy, why are you just standing there? Let's go! We're gonna miss it!" Right, let's go," exclaimed Pate, completely re-energized. He turned to B. "B, it's best you stay back this time. I'll get enough bread for the both of us, don't you worry. We'll have a feast when I get back," Pate said assuringly. B, starving and unconvinced, nodded in agreement. And off the three boys went, back into the anarchy of the streets. Alex and Hugh led the way once again, with Pate couple paces behind them. As they made their way toward the docks, they went down narrow streets, past ramshackle buildings, and through dark alleys. Pate could see smoke rising from the buildings in Flea Bottom and hear shouting from time to time. They drew closer to the docks, and the masses became thicker. Crowds of small folk lined the streets, contained only by a single line of city watchmen on either side of the street. The reduced band of orphans pressed forward into the mob, trying to get a look at what lay ahead. Pate was determined to see the royal procession and get a glimpse of his darling Lady Sansa. He persisted forward, leaving Alex and Hugh behind. Finally, Pate made it to the front of the crowd, where the only obstruction to his view was a burly city watchman covered in mail and donning a half-helm that had marks of battle dented in it. Pate figured he dare not try to push past the watchman. He stood on the tips of his toes, anxiously waiting to see his love, Lady Sansa. He could make it out in the distance. The royal procession was approaching. He saw the sunlight reflecting off the armor of the Kingsguard and what appeared to be a stagecoach behind it. "There she is. Sansa must be in that carriage," Pate whispered to himself. "My moment is finally here." Time seemed to stand still as the procession slowly moved toward him. Yet as it drew closer, the mood around him began to change. Pate started to hear sarcastic jeering being hurled in the direction of King Joffrey. "Hail, Joffrey! All hail the king! 7 blessings to you, my lord!" The procession grew louder and closer, and the crowd turned more hateful. "Please, my lord, we're hungry! Bastard! Monster of incest!" Pate's hopeful enthusiasm quickly turned to despair. He shook his head in every direction, looking for Alex and Hugh, but to no avail. He turned back to the procession. The royal party was only about a dozen paces from Pate now. He could see the king's guard leading, white cloaks, hands on the hilts of their sword, heads on swivels, scanning the threats. And there was the hound, a nasty piece of work, hulking and unmistakable, with burns covering half his face. Behind them, he could see the wretched King Joffrey looking glorious in his hand-smelt parade armor, but also drenched in distress, unsure whether to order the deaths of those hurling insults or to tuck and hide in his stagecoach. The procession halted to a stop. A woman had stepped in front, holding something wrapped in her arms. The city watch lining the streets was beginning to buckle under the pressure of the crowd, leaning in toward the procession. Pate could not make out what the woman was holding or what was being said. He looked up at the small folk on the balconies on the opposite side of the street, trying to gauge what was happening from their reactions. There he saw Alex cheering and yelling down toward the royal procession. "Alex!" shouted Pate, but it was in vain. Alex had a look on his face, angrier than Pate had ever seen. Right when the crowd had almost completely overwhelmed the wall of the city watch on each side of the street, Alex furiously chucked something in the direction of King Joffrey. Pate couldn't make out what it was, but it appeared to have struck its target. "Find out who did that and bring him to me!" shouted the boy king at the top of his lungs. "Kill them! Kill them all!" he demanded. Chaos ensued. The crowd boiled over and trampled the procession. Pate could hear orders being shouted from the royal procession. "Ride harder for the gates now!" Pate didn't have time to think. Everything was happening so fast around him. He was beginning to be crushed by the desperate and hungry horde. He felt himself losing air quickly, unable to breathe in fully. He pushed as hard as he could through the masses, away from the street, looking for any respite to catch his breath. After what seemed like hours, Pate finally made it out of the mob. He found himself in dark stables, struggling to catch his breath. He hunched over, coughing and wheezing terribly. Violent shouts and horrid screams were coming from the direction of the street. There was a stench of burning wood and flesh lingering in the air. Then he realized he wasn't alone. Ahead of him, on the far side of the stable, appeared to be 3 men wrestling with a young woman on the ground. Pate could hear her struggling, crying out for help. As his eyes adjusted to the darkness, he could distinguish some of the features of the girl on the ground. The girl had thick, soft, auburn hair and beautiful, deep blue eyes. A finely woven golden gown that only nobility could afford was being torn from her back by the scoundrels menacing over her. It became clear to him, the girl was Lady Sansa of House Stark, the maid of his dreams. "Now this is the moment I've been waiting for," Pate thought to himself. "The moment where I rescue Lady Sansa and win her over as my bride. I'll show them." He took a step toward her, and crack! A massive mailed fist caught Pate on the side of his head. "No, no, that can't be it. I must get it. I cannot miss this," Pate thought as he fell lifelessly to the mud-covered floor. Dazed and disoriented, Pate struggled to his feet. He couldn't tell how much time had passed, maybe a few seconds, maybe a few minutes. Regaining consciousness, Pate looked up and saw the back of a colossal figure covered in chainmail. While holding a man by the neck into the air with his left hand, the giant ran a blade across the man's belly with his right, spilling the man's entrails to the dirt floor. Pate gagged at the sight and the stench of the poor man's last meal. The giant gathered up Sansa from the ground, threw her over his shoulder, turned, and started walking back toward Pate. Pate could see now who the giant was. Pate dropped to his knees and slammed his eyes shut in fear. "Please, please, Sir Hound, I wasn't with them. It wasn't me," was all Pate could muster before his eyes opened, only to see the Hound had passed right by him, carrying Sansa on his shoulder. "No, no, that was it. I missed it. My opportunity is gone forever. I had the chance to save her, the maid of my dreams, but I wasn't brave enough to do it. Just like I wasn't brave enough to save the baker," Pate thought to himself. "After all this, I'll never amount to anything. I am just a peasant named Pate." He noticed something glimmering where Lady Sansa had been sprawled out on the ground. Pate slowly moved toward it, dejected, defeated, the side of his face burning in pain from the Hound's fist. It was what appeared to be a small pouch. He hovered over to retrieve it. Upon examination, Pate found that the small pouch contained 3 gold dragons and 5 silver stags. Lady Sansa's coin purse must have slipped from her gown during the assault. "Be will eat tonight," said Pate.
A peasant named Pate by what pen name are you going by?
C.E. Sims.
Yeah, so when you see fancy. That, yeah, when you see that on the books in the future, that is Chris. that's his pen name.
Well, when you give it away that quickly,
that's
going to
be Chris
really...
C.E. Sims. It's just go by your name. Everyone's going to know it's you. I'm going to tell everyone.
All right.
So tell us a little bit about this story. This story, let's start with this question number one. You've told me about Pate for a while. He's been in your noodle. When did you start with Pate? Was it when you watched Thrones?
So, Pate, it's interesting because the whole idea of Pate came from something that we've alluded to in multiple conversations. It's like, how would I fit into this, like, brutal, you know, rich at times, but also the poorest of poor at times. Like, how would I, as a regular human being in the modern world, fit into this story? And I thought it would be interesting to kind of draw a contrast from what we see on screen a lot of all these extravagant people who are making decisions at the top and going to the lowest of low that nobody even knows his name. He's got no parents. Most people don't even care about him. The orphans he runs around with don't even care about him, except for this little girl that he formed a bond with in this makeshift orphanage. So anyways, that's a long way to say that this story evolved from when I first thought of it. Pate was evolving as I watched Game of Thrones and eventually House of the Dragon. And then Baara came up as I actually had my daughter in July of 2023. It actually kind of, it's interesting how it works, right? Because when we're thinking of fiction, no matter what it is, whether we're watching it or we're actually writing it, we kind of relate things to ourselves. And to see the evolution of this story where I originally planned on ending it with Pate failing and the Hound and Sansa walking by and he's like, "I'll never amount to anything but a peasant named Pate." That was the original ending, as I thought of this story.
Yeah.
And when I had my daughter, Baara came in and added like a glimmer of hope to this story.
Aww.
And that, like, no matter how we feel that, you know, where we might fail or if we're having a bad day or whatever, you're still a hero to someone.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's great.
And I thought that was important to add in the story as it evolved.
Awesome. Kinsley, have a question?
Yeah, let me jump in. I think that's awesome, first of all, that, like, it's so funny to me that Pate, even though he is the lowest of the low, he immediately starts, like, in the dream, his own self-worth is really, really highly tied to the highborn people in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun that you ended it then in a place where instead of him saving Sansa kind of saves him, and with him and Bea with the money that she leaves behind.
Mm-hmm.
But then also he finds that he didn't need to save Sansa, and he instead needs to save Bea, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
And feed her. So that's not a great question, but I can...
No, it's a great thought, and it's just funny because, you know, these things happen to every single one of us, right? Like, there's so much reality in this story of Pate, just from my own experiences, like, coming up short a little bit. Like, even the job that I have now, the first time I interviewed for it, I didn't get it. You know, and we have all these, like, you know, quote-unquote failures throughout our lives. And then, you know, when you take a step back and really think about, you know, the whole perspective of what's happening in a big picture. And, you know, having a life event like having a kid really gives you perspective to, you know, what's happening. Like, who needs saving? Who, like, do I need to be saved on a daily basis? No, but, like, I have someone at home that's relying on me. And, you know, Pate learning that actively as he's dream chasing, literally, Sansa.
Yeah.
And going through that experience was really fun to flesh out that story.
That was actually going to be my question. And first off, I just want to say I'm really happy that you cut the shower scene between Alex, you, and Donald. It was very weird and out of left field. And how, get my back. No, you get my back. I was like, Chris, this is three pages of just shout. It was very weird. But sort of, everybody has dreams, right? And I don't want this to sound, this is going to sound weird, but I'm going to try to phrase it correctly. But you reach a point in life where you're like, okay, you have to be practical versus the dream, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Pate's a good lesson for that, where he wants to be this hero and this, like, I'm going to save Lady Sansa, but it's like, there's only so many people that can save old Lady Sansa. Yeah. And at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot more people just making it, you know?
Well, what's funny about that thought, too, is that when you're watching Game of Thrones for the first time, you don't expect the Hound to be the one to go back and get Sansa in that moment, right? Like,
yeah.
If you guys think back to that scene, you know, Tyrion rushes everyone back to the gates. They get in there. They're kind of trying to figure stuff out. Cersei's yelling at people to go try to find Sansa. Because at this point in time, she has more value as a hostage.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Than anything. Tyrion commands the rest of the Kingsguard there. I think it's like Meryn Trant and Mandon Moore that's there. Neither one of them have the bravery to go do it.
Right.
And they're all sitting there trying to figure this out. Meanwhile, the Hound is already acting on
it. Yeah, he's doing it.
And someone that we thought had no sense of honor or bravery or anything... was already there doing it.
And the way it's filmed, he kills all of them before you see him, kind of. Yeah. It was like Kinsey said, it's a, what is it, what do you call it, a mythical reveal?
A name dropping, yeah.
Yeah, mythical name dropping. That was what it was. It was sort of a, here's the Hound.
So, and these are things that as you're writing the story, you don't even think, like my theme, like I mentioned, was, you know, we have failures and life doesn't really go the way that you want it to.
Oh, that was the theme? I thought the theme was all about getting that bread.
That was the underlying theme.
Yeah, yeah. The first and then the subtext. Exactly. You gotta read the subtext, guys.
But it's interesting how these things all kind of weave into one another. Like, I didn't even think about the fact that Pate wanted to save Sansa this whole time and Sansa ended up saving him and Bea until Kinsey mentioned it in an earlier conversation. And then your thought track about how the Hound was not really even supposed to be the one, the heroic one, and he saved Sansa.
And the addition of Bea, too, just raises the stakes. I love Bea as a character. I'm already a Bea fan. And the fact that she wasn't originally in the story, it's like, come on, I got to have some more Barra there.
Yeah, and so Barra, another fun part about these Westeros stories is... And you're reading through the books right now. As someone who's read the books and seen the show, you have an opportunity to combine what you think are the best aspects of the scene in the show and the scene in the books. And Barra was actually a character in the books, and she had a brief cameo on the show as an infant. But she was killed, ordered to be killed by Cersei.
That bitch.
As like one of Robert's bastards. Remember when she was...
Oh, yes, yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes, when she was killing anyone who was relation to Robert.
Yeah, and so because it was an infant, that killing happened off screen. But I thought, you know, what if we give Barra a chance at life?
Yeah, I love
that.
What
would that look like?
That's the kind of name dropping I love. Like, anybody who has read that book will hear your story sense and be like, is that the Barra that I'm thinking of?
Is that Barra from the... Yeah. Very cool.
I love that.
It was great, Chris. Yeah.
Thanks. And then
on
also
that topic,
Well, just on the topic of combining the books and the show, in the show, the procession stopped when someone threw cow dung at Joffrey, which also happened in the books. But the reason the procession stopped was because a woman stepped in front of the royal procession holding her dead baby in her arms. And from Pate's point of view, he couldn't make that out because the city watchman was standing in front of him. But that was a very powerful moment because this woman, to her, she was probably dead inside. She didn't care about getting cut down by the King's Guard at that point. She steps in front of this procession of heavily armored men and is just like, doesn't even say anything, just holding her dead baby because she probably doesn't know what to do. And Joffrey like tosses a coin at her and all these people start fighting over the coin.
Interesting.
And then the dung comes in, and then the riot breaks out.
I tell you, man. Yeah, once the dung gets involved, well, all bets are off.
Speaking of the dung, Alex was one of like my most favorite characters, or a very interesting character in your story. So one of the questions I was going to ask you was, one, how much like character mapping did you do? Because one of the, like, I'm not shocked at all that you're already an awesome writer, but I know that this isn't your day job. Like, you don't write fan fiction for, you know, this is maybe your first.
Yeah, this is 100% my first.
Yeah. One of the like signs of a new writer is usually they write characters that all sound and look the same. However, all of your characters have like very different physical identifiers, different voices, which shout out to Sheedy, you did a really good job about that.
Yeah, thank you.
You did.
Like, even I loved when Bara calls Dumb Donald Dumb Dumb. That's like so cute.
Yeah, I like that addition.
Yeah. So yeah, my question was, how much character mapping did you do? And if you've done quite a bit, which it sounds like you have, you don't have to answer this if it's giving anything away, but Alex, having Targaryen hair, but not the eyes, I was wondering, is he a bastard of some sort? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah, so,
because that would make that throwing of the dung pretty poignant.
Yeah, so two great questions. I'll answer the first one. 100% my first time writing fan fiction. I will give all the credit to George R. R. Martin because I literally... I was like, how would he write this?
You do QAnon subreddit.
Dude, that's not fiction. What do you mean? It's all real. So you go through school, you're forced to read all this stuff in English and in literature class, and like, fine. Like, you get grades to pass. I fell in love with reading when I picked up the Game of Thrones book. And then I read through all A Song of Ice and Fire, and then all the, you know, encyclopedias and prequels and sequels and all, you know, whatever material I could. And so a lot of my writing style when I was, you know, coming up with this was emulating George R. R. Martin. So all the credit there is 100% to him.
To the big guy.
Give yourself some credit, though, because it takes, it takes some skill to read something and be like, this thing is working.
But also the bravery to write your own stuff. It's nerve-wracking sometimes.
Yeah, write and read it. Anyways. Well, that's why I had you read it. So.
I was nervous.
And then your second question. So Alex's descent. This character's specifics were left ambiguous, similar to like kind of how Pate's were. But within my mind, the lore around Alex was that he was a Valyrian bastard of some sort.
Love that.
So, and that's, we talked about like, kind of like his hair and skin being a little bit dirty. If we want to tie it into how House of the Dragon portrayed the Valyrians, it could be like a mixed race individual, with that silver gray hair. So that was kind of where I was going with
Very
Alex.
Cool.
And then with Pate, I left him intentionally ambiguous because I wanted the reader or listener to be able to kind of picture themselves in that situation.
Oh, I love that. Very cool. Those were the questions I had. Well, Chris, that was a great story, man. I loved that one.
Thank you. Thank you for reading it. You did a fantastic job.
You know, man, it's nerve-wracking. I don't like reading in front of people. But that was another episode of Westeros Stories.
Love it. Well, thank you for tuning in. You know, we have a lot of fun with these, so again, if you guys come up with any ideas, we would love to hear them, even if you, like, write your own story.
Yeah.
That would be cool. But any sort of engagement, we always look forward to, so.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us, and we will be back soon.
I'm just going to say, Allison, hit me up. To quote Taylor Swift, it's a Westeros story. Baby, just say yes. Come on, we're having a good time.
Oh, gosh. Death wish, not to be messed with, tested, quiz. They shooting shots.